listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 48. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
What up, what up? Glad to be back. How's it going?
I'm doing well also. So also glad to be back. So there you go.
Back-to-back weeks for the first time in a minute. We have more stuff that's going on and then not at the same time. It's kind of a weird situation. Yeah. Since Cardinals are just starting, Battle Hawks are just about to start. We have technically, you know, if once the Battlehawks start, we'll have four St. Louis sports going on at the same time with obviously Cardinals, Blue City, and then Battlehawks. But we're kind of like in a waiting period. And the fact that the Cardinals first game just happened today, which we'll get to in just a second. And the, you know, the Blues have kind of been in the same situation for the past, I don't know, 3 months.
They're kind of wrapping up their season. The Cardinals are starting their season. Battlehawks starting their season, City just starting, so we're kind of in a transition here.
Right.
Well, let's go ahead and jump straight into it here and talk about those Cardinals. So they had their opening day against the Dodgers, and it went absolutely horrendous. What was the final score? 7-1 loss?
7-1. Yep, that was not the start we were hoping for, especially in the opening game of the series. But
yeah, so just a... just a couple highlights here before we talk about our impressions about the opening day game and so on and so forth. But we had three hits in the game. All of them were by Goldschmidt, who was 3-for-4 with a home run. That's the only reason why we got the one run. Miles Michaelis pitched 4.1 innings, gave up 7 hits and 5 earned runs in that time. He did strike out 5, but also walked 2 and is now posting an ERA of 10.38. That's from our ace. Now that being said, this is against the Dodgers, you know, the $27 billion team or whatever the hell they are now.
And and he had a better start than Yamamoto. So there you go.
That's a good point. That's a very good point, actually.
Just saying.
Yeah. So obviously it's one game. It definitely does not look good. And the fact that we're going up against the Dodgers too, again, a team that is just trying to buy a ring at this point. It's not a great look, but OJ, what's your takes here so far? I mean, you know, one game, I know it's just one game. We have 161 more to go. But you know, it's got to leave kind of a sour taste in your mouth, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, nobody likes to lose like that. So yeah, it sucks, but it's also one game and the first game of the season. So, yeah. You know,
I mean, to me, go on. Sorry.
Well, so I was going to say what really annoyed me is that basically none of our pitchers that we threw out there could get out without giving up at least a run. And I'm not exactly sure why. I mean, some of them were walking guys. Like Riley O'Brien clearly looked like, you know, he was wild at first. I don't know if he had nerves or what, but he had command issues.
Way inside there.
Well, yeah, his stuff looked nasty, but then he had enough command issues to put enough guys on. To where he still gave up a run, and he gave up like the one hit or whatever that he did. So, you know, but basically everybody we put in, I guess, got tagged with a run or something like that. So it's pretty crappy. Just everything the Dodgers hit found a hole. Like, that's just the way it goes sometimes, I guess, too. Because, I mean, they did hit some like doubles to the wall in the gaps and stuff like that, but. Some home runs, but like a lot of their hits that were getting guys on were like soft hit ground balls that just found a gap. It's like, oh man, now we're doing this shit again. Like I honestly think a big part of what is driving the offense, like first of all, I think MLB's juicing the balls. Like I think they started doing it full force last year, but then I also think that the rule changes, keeping all the infielders having to line up on the dirt, makes it so that all kinds of like ground balls find it through the infield a lot more often now. So I think it just really screws over the rule changes kind of screwed over teams like the Cardinals that were trying to build through defense and made it harder to defend, basically. So it made it so it's more like, oh, you have to have strikeout pitches now. That's kind of why I didn't like It's one of the things I don't like about the rule change. I think that's the unintended consequences that teams are going to go more strikeout walk oriented as far as pitchers go now. And it's going to make the game even slower with less balls in play.
Yep.
Because it's so much.
I agree. A lot more money ball. You know, you're waiting for that pitch to be able to, you know, hit it the other way to the, yeah, 110%. You know, OJ, that was something that I think we might have talked offline about at when this change was coming. It's like, you're taking away what the Cardinals have done historically great for hundreds of, like, for what, 100 and some years that we've been doing it is good defense. We've had obviously some bad seasons here and there, but that's normally what we're really good at. And you're literally handcuffing them for the sake of offense. So then it's like, okay, well, that's how, like, the Yankees won so many games, you know what I mean, for a long time, is because they had the best hitters. And not to take away the fact that they weren't great players, but Babe Ruth fielding the ball wasn't the greatest. You know what I mean? He could pitch. He could somewhat run, but, you know, he was a hitter first and foremost. You know what I mean? So I think that it's just now it's going to become, especially for the fact there's no salary cap, you're just going to be looking for hitters, just like what the Dodgers are doing. You know, yep. And it's just, I'm not, yep. Yeah.
Buy your ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll see what happens tomorrow, you know.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep. And hopefully, you know, we can at least squeak one out against the Dodgers. It'd be nice if we could win that series. That'd be great. But it's just hard to hold out hope. And
yeah,
you know, just it was so funny. I saw something on, this was literally in the fourth inning. I saw someone posted up on X or whatever. It was a picture of Nolan Arenado, like, who had just struck out. I don't even think it was from this year. It was last year. And it just said St. Louis Cardinals eliminated. I'm like, oh my God, that's so brutal. But that's how a lot of people in St. Louis feel right now already. It's like, come on, man.
I just get tired of that shit. Like, I really get tired of the but just got a whale online constantly. It's like all they want to do is complain. And they just the same shit over and over. It's like, just shut up. Like, just wait and see what happens first before you start losing your mind over it. You know what I mean?
100%. People are nuts
these days, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just because, again, we're all bored. We're just, like, looking for something to complain about, I guess. Well, I don't know.
That's what it is. It's people that – I guess the people that have time to sit around and leave comments on message boards are bored enough with their lives that they have nothing better to do than just
complain. Well, they're bandwagon fans, too. The fans,
yeah, 100%, yeah.
You know, bandwagon fans are tendency to like that. They're there to whenever they're winning, but anytime that they lose, then they're ready to just throw the team in the trash. And
well, like, yeah, it's like so. They just – automatically want to give up, like, oh yeah. They have no shot. It's like they're in such a rush to be like, oh, I'm the fucking smart guy that sees the disaster coming. Like, that's what they care about. They don't care about anything. It's ridiculous, right.
It's just like, and I think that's very prevalent in St. Louis. We've talked about this before because of the Cardinals. Like, there's been a lot of bandwagoner fans here. I mean,
spoiled rotten
even like when the fans, when the Rams were not good, I can't tell you how many freaking Patriots fans are in the St. Louis area because because I like Tom Brady. Well, you can like Tom Brady, but also know that franchise stole a freaking championship from the city. So how the hell do you, you know, support the, I'm not going to, because they win. It's easy to root for a winner and not for, you know, a loser. I mean, look at 2019 with the Blues, for example. Everybody and their mom came out and was like, oh, I've been a hard fan forever. How many people are saying that now? You know what I mean? Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, I don't watch as many games as I used to because it's hard for me to watch. You know, it's just hard to, like, continue to watch that where, you know, there's good effort. We talked about this before on this show. You know, there's good effort every once in a while, and there's not good effort every once in a while. And that's just hard. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to watch that, and hard to watch your team just get absolutely destroyed. Well, but I am first and foremost a Blues fan. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to watch a team that's winning. Of course it is. It's exciting. It's, you know, but the thing is that even if you're not watching every game, you're still following the team. You're still interested in what's going on day in and day out. And you're keeping up with what's going on and how the team is, you know, maybe restructuring, going through. We're like having these conversations about, you know, our strength, our weaknesses, where we need to improve, et cetera. You know, it's part of being the solution. I mean, even though we're not really part of the team, but we're part of the fan base. And part of a true fan base should be the ones that are looking for ways of improvement, not just, oh, okay, well, we're just going to throw our hands up and it's completely over. All hope is lost, you know, burn it to the ground.
Yeah. It's game one of 162. Michael's had bad start.
And let's face it, going into this, we all had a pretty good feeling that this being that it's against the Dodgers, it's their home opener. There's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that, you know, while, yeah, maybe it's been a tough one to watch, I didn't go into it, you know, with these extreme expectations, like we're going to blow them out of the water. I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. we might lose, but it is what it is. I'm glad that baseball is back. Yeah, I know that Miles Michaelis, you know, he went in there, especially in the first inning. He looked pretty rough. He started kind of coming back around in typical Michaelis way a little bit, you know, in the second inning, et cetera. I was like, okay, maybe he's coming a little more into his form, but obviously giving up 5 earned runs over 4 innings, that definitely put us in a spot early on. But, you know, the most upsetting part for me was the fact of not really seeing any offense. That I was kind of expecting the pitching thing to be rough, but not really seeing any offense and only seeing Goldie, that was a little more disappointing for me, I think. But I mean, I'll hand it to Glasnow. He had a solid performance, you know, he really did overall. But I was hoping that we could land one more, you know, more than one on the board for sure. But yeah, it is what it is.
It's super funny. So I did say that Goldschmidt right now has got to be considered the NL MVP. he's the only one doing anything for our team right now.
Hey, so I'm at least glad that he's showing up. I mean, that was a concern too because of last year as well. It's like, how is Goldie going to come into this year? And I'm like, well, at least Goldie's coming in, you know, hot. But at the same time, it's only one game, you know. Yeah, we have areas to improve, but it's still so early in the season. And I think that we'll see some positive changes soon as well, you know. So as a fan, I'm really hoping for the best. You know, I'm sure I feel a little bit anxious about the direction we're headed, but, you know, I'll just be watching closely and see how we respond in the next few games.
Yeah, you do have to. I do want to note that Victor Scott did get his first stolen base today.
That is true. He did. I did see that.
He got on base. I guess they ruled it an error because Freddie Freeman missed a scoop.
Yeah, missed it. Yep.
But so then he stole second, and we had a chance to score a second run. And of course, we couldn't make it happen. But
yeah, yeah, the LOBs really hurt us there.
Yeah, they might have.
I think that's one of the other things too that goes into, especially this.
We had that problem last year.
Is the fact that we have, you know, so many injuries already, and there's a lot of youth that's playing right now. So yeah, like, you
there
know,
were,
you
what,
have a lot of
players, I think, that were like 23 or under on our roster, mm-hmm. our opening day roster. Isn't that right? Like, I think there was like 4 of them. So there, and that usually is not a good sign, you know, being that young, you know, being that young that in your initial lineup for the opening day per se, you know.
Right.
So a lot of youth injuries definitely is a concern for sure. You know, yeah. We need our key players healthy and on the field if we want to compete at the highest level, especially when we're going up against teams like that, you know?
Yeah,
for sure.
Honestly, if it wouldn't have even been that bad if Michaelis could have just kept the ball in the park. That's really sure. what killed us the most. Cause I mean, what they got 3 runs off of.
Yeah. Well, we had Betts and then Freeman. I think those were like, they weren't back to back because obviously Ohtani bat second, but you know, damn near almost back to back home runs there in that inning. Yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. So then you only lose like 4-1. You know, maybe right. you pitch different relievers because you're closer in the game before, you know, instead of going to Pallante, maybe you bring somebody else out to try and keep the game closer, you know. But the home run rate's got to like go down because Victor Scott in center field, you know, guys will have to, if they hit any kind of like line drives to the outfield, there's a decent chance they'll be able to get to him. So, as long as they can keep it in the park, they ought to be okay. But that's the thing. I haven't seen enough to where I can really evaluate their defense yet because mostly it's just been like routine plays or home runs. So, like,
that's a good point, too. Yeah. So it's just going to be interesting to see, obviously, how this season progresses. You know, I think a lot of St. Louis fans kind of look at this as, you know, it's an exciting thing that Cardinal baseball is back, but we're not like holding our breath for high expectations. But who knows? You know, this could turn out to be a fantastic season. hopefully it is. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
By the way, congratulations, Clemson, because Clemson basketball just finished their upset of Arizona Wildcats. So,
yeah.
Which, by the way, before we get into anything else real quick, because we'll transition to Blues here in just a second, but I did get asked this as well, why we didn't do a bracket challenge or anything like that for the podcast. I'm like, well, we didn't really have enough time to prepare because the freaking NCAA is just stupid that with this crap now. I mean, well, because like literally, so this past Sunday you had, or not this past Sunday, but the Sunday beforehand, you had the championship Sundays, and then they started games on Tuesday for the first four in. It's like, well, how do you expect anybody to be able to just be able to just, okay, go on there and do a roster or whatever? You know what I mean? I thought it was at least like going to start on Wednesday is what I thought, but it started on Tuesday. You give two people less than 2 days. They did the selection on Monday and then they started playing Tuesday. What? Like, are you kidding me? Yeah. There's literally no time in between it. So like I did one bracket because it's the only one that doesn't do like the first four in or whatever. And that's it. You know what I mean? So anyways, just had to bring that up. Sorry for anybody that was looking for that kind of content. We just didn't have time because it was,
well,
it didn't
make let's face sense. It. The bracket would have been busted in day one anyway, damn near. So
okay. Yeah, for sure.
It was a tragedy as it always is.
Yeah. Especially now.
Yeah.
Anywho. All right, guys, well, let's transition here and talk a little bit about the Blues. So with the Blues right now, just a quick update for the fans. We are 38-30-4 for 80 points. This is actually 2-0-1 since our last session, so not bad. We are fifth in the Central. We've moved up a position since last week. We're 19 points behind the Stars for the Central lead, which unfortunately we've lost track in there. We are now 6 points out of the last wild card spot, which is two more than what we were last week, unfortunately. We now are ninth in the West. We've moved up a spot. We were 10th last week. We are 17th in the NHL. We've moved up two positions from the 19th position, and we are 20 points behind the Rangers for the lead in the NHL, which obviously we would have to win out. They would have to lose out. Everybody would have to lose in front of us, and we would have to win out to be able to even catch the Rangers at this point. But we did make traction in that. We were 22 points behind. Now we're or 20 points behind. So playoff chances are not looking very good. As I've looked at three different predictors, you know, I averaged them out. Then we are looking at a 4.4% chance of making the playoffs at this point. We are projected to finish with 90 points, which is going 500 for the rest of the season, essentially, because we're at 80 now. Obviously, there's 10 games left to go. The max we can get is 100 points, which would be a remarkable feat if we were able to get to 100 points.
So basically, yeah.
But the problem with it is the Knights just have to lose. They are essentially three games ahead of us, you know, with 10 games remaining. For both of us, but they're up by 6 points, which is three total games. So, Adam, I'll start with you. You know, we know that the playoff chances are slim here. I mean, do you think there's a chance? Or, I mean, there's always a chance, I guess. But
we're really at a crucial junction in this season. But I think that with that recent loss to the Knights, that overtime loss, that really set our playoff chances to be – like, that really took a hit to it. And I think that really put the final nail in the coffin, in my opinion. You know, to turn things around, it's going to take a lot. We're going to have to really focus on a lot of key areas, and obviously a lot of that's going to be dependent on how well the Knights are playing as well. I looked at their schedule. It looks like the Knights are, for the most part, a pretty easy schedule. Yeah, they faced the Canucks twice, actually, first on the second and then on the eighth. So that's going to be harder, but they're facing the Wild, the Yotes, the Blackhawks, the Ducks. I mean, they're facing the Wild twice. So let's just say there's a very good chance that they could easily go in here 500, meaning that we're going to have to basically win out if we even want to have a chance at it, in my opinion.
Right.
So I really think at this point, I think that ship has sailed, sadly.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't look great. You know, right now, and as you said,
I'm hopeful,
it's 4.4 at this point is not great.
It's too plate now. I really do. I think it was a must win. The fact that Vegas was able to walk out of that game with 2 points and us with one, we really need to go in, us with the 2 points and nothing, for them to be able to at least stay competitive. Now that they're starting to slip ahead, and we're looking at that schedule, it looks pretty damn hard to do. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's improbable.
Yep.
But hey, let's go out there and win as many games as we can. We're winning right now in the second period, 3-2 against the Flames. So let's do our best.
They've started playing some pretty good hockey, honestly. I mean,
And I agree with you, OJ. You know, and it's one of these things that it just might be too late, you know.
A little too late.
But hopefully we can build off it. You know, OJ, so, you know, obviously, you know, the chances of making the playoffs are very slim, but with everything that came into the season for expectations and everything, what are your thoughts on the season overall? Has it been a giant disappointment, or is this kind of what you thought it would be? Obviously, you know, you always want to make the playoffs and get a run at the cup, but, you know, what's your expectations going in the next year and your thoughts kind of as a review of this past season or this season that's currently going on?
So I kind of thought they would be like make it into the playoffs, but, you know, and on the edge of that. So this is kind of about where I thought they were going to be at, you know, fighting for a playoff spot. But more importantly is that they actually seem to have figured out how to play a good team game again, because they really are trying to make the playoffs. So they're fighting as hard as they can. And it's showing them how do they need to be playing hockey to win hockey games. Like, this is great to see because it gives me a lot more hope for next season. A lot of this roster is going to come back. So it's good to see him playing real well. And hopefully they can carry that into next year. And then, you know, maybe they don't need to fight for a playoff spot at the end of the season, you know?
Right. And that's, I think, a good point too, OJ, was that, you know, coming in to the expectations for me as I think that they were going to hit the wild card spot, like a last wild card or something like that. So this is just below that. And truthfully, if you just had like, if you negated one of the long stretches without a win in the season, just one of them, you're probably in this race right now. You know what I mean? You're probably, you know, maybe two points out to like one game out and you have more of a hope. You know what I mean? Three games with 10 games left is very, very difficult to overcome. I mean, weird things have happened, but I think that this team is kind of right where we thought they would be. You know, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, who knows, right? Yeah. To your point, though, a lot of the roster is coming back next year, so hopefully you get a lot of continuity. I think that would be awesome. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see. See what ends up happening. It'd be nice if we could somehow open up the checkbook and get some good veterans or something like that as well, but I don't see that happening.
I know for a fact Scandella is going to be off the books. So I'm not exactly sure he is. It's like maybe like $3 million or something like that, but that'll be important to free up because that'll maybe
get 100%
somebody or something. I don't know. We'll see how we can handle it. Most importantly, I guess it'll give us a little cap space to work with if we want to look at making some trades. Because I think Armstrong mentioned something about potentially, you know, trade some of the more far off ads. Assets for some that are more close to being ready type of thing. So I don't know if that makes sense. We could talk about that in the off season more.
Yeah, when things get a little closer to it and go from there. Once we have a better picture of what it potentially could end up being.
Yeah.
Well, guys, let's transition here and just do some quick updates for City and for the Battlehawks. So real quick to the Battlehawks, they do have their first game this coming Saturday. I think it's at 3 p.m. against the Michigan Panthers. So we'll get to see what the their first USFL team, what that looks like, because it's still the USFL division, if I'm right. Yeah.
And we're in the USFL division. Yeah, under the UFL. So, yeah, there's two different divisions, USFL and XFL under the UFL.
Yeah, and there's four teams in each, not five. Sorry, ESPN.
Yep. Yeah.
Which, OJ, this is actually a really funny story. So ESPN posted up, like, check out the new uniforms for all 10 teams. And so I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Another mistake about the XFL UFL, right? I wrote an email to ESPN stating, listen, man, I'm not trying to be rude, but like, this is ridiculous. You guys continue to make like stupid mistakes. I know this is not going to find any or like find anybody, but if you want somebody to like, to run this for you for the UFL, I'll do it for you. Okay. I get an email back stating, you know, hey, we put your concerns over to the right bucket, essentially, right? Thank you very much for your email. And then it was changed. Then all of a sudden,
that was wild.
I was like, damn, I don't know if I actually made a difference or if that was coincidental, but hey, I'll take it, right? That's pretty.
Yeah.
All right.
Sounds AI shit. Like.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well,
dude.
I checked out the writer about who wrote that originally, and the dude on Twitter or X or whatever is like a basketball writer. You're like, he doesn't know. I don't think he didn't have anything to say about UFL.
Yeah,
and
XFL, that's the problem
nothing,
with what ESPN's been doing.
He only writes about or follows basketball shit. And I guess they probably tasked him with like, hey, you got to write an article for UFL. And he's like, okay. Mm-hmm. And just like probably Google some shit and threw it in an article. And
I just wonder if
like, hey, ChatGPT, write it for me.
Could have been an AI. Could have very well been an AI and looked at like, you know, the old league and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. He's probably like, fuck you, ESPN.
Probably.
One salary to do two jobs, motherfuckers.
Like, sure. Like, I'm here to freaking write about basketball, not your shit.
Yeah.
I don't know shit about this anyway.
Yeah.
But hopefully we have a good season. Obviously, with AJ McCarron coming back, that was a huge boost for us. The reigning MVP of the XFL. Mm-hmm. And a guy that brings a lot of success to the team. You know, two national title winner. So I think that's, you know, badass. So very excited about that. We'll definitely talk about that probably next week after hopefully a win for the Battle Hawks. The only other thing to update on the St. Louis sports scene is STLSC played another game since our last session and yet another freaking tie. So they're 1-4-0 for 7 points. They are now eighth in the West as they continue to plummet down because of the fact that we keep tying. At least we're not losing. But we
have to start winning.
There,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
While we're not losing, we're still not winning. And that's not good because at the end of the day, it's not necessarily about wins and losses, it's about points. And that's a problem. Because looking at the standings, we're literally in the eighth spot, meaning that we are in a final series playoff spot. Like we would be going up against KC for a spot now to potentially get a play in into the playoffs. So not looking good that there. We definitely need to start winning for sure because we've only won one game.
Yeah, we've won
out
one
of five.
Game, but we haven't lost any yet. So
we haven't lost any, but we still have only won. I mean, we've only won one out of four. We've tied four games. We definitely take the cake when it comes to that.
They've definitely got their issues, but in general,
a lot of draws.
Playing well enough to have earned more wins than they actually have. Certainly, they've had some things go against them. Like, you know, in LA, they led very late, and then they let up a late minute goal. Now, that's one of their problems they have is on these set pieces. That's still a problem. So I think that's just going to be a problem this season probably until they figure out, you know, some other setup for it or something. I don't know. Or maybe we need Tim Parker back, something like that, because that's it. But the way they play with the ball is much improved from last season. So if they can, you know, it gives them a little extra weapon to use against teams going forward. And, so to me, I think the wins will come and they'll start winning games here soon enough if they can in the way they're playing. But they just have to keep pushing. I mean, you know what? Actually, that's something I wanted to mention. In that most recent game, like against DC, it was – the ref was – a very negative impact on the game because they wasted
very much so.
A lot of time.
We're used to that.
Yeah, it was. It's up there with Sporting KC with how much time.
Yeah, it was bad, man.
There's like I get
yellow cards flying everywhere too. Damn.
Yeah, I get not rushing when you're ahead, but like not that. Like the goalie's just laying down with on the ball randomly. Actually, oh. Even is just randomly faking injuries. Like,
dude, there was a meme about that. Literally, the entire it showed DC, everybody literally just down on the ground.
Yeah. Because there was a play where no one touched the goalie.
Literally, everyone's on the ground.
And then he just, as soon as play's about to, starts again, he just lays down. Oh, I'm hurt.
Yep.
Oh, yep. My God. Clowns, dude. Yep. So they should have gotten multiple yellows for that. You know, yeah. If there's actual reffing the match, I guess that probably would have happened. So
for sure.
That's one good thing, actually, that is going to be the game for the games this weekend. Is that the real refs are back, so that means they're going to implement the new time-wasting rules and stuff like that. So DC would not have been able to pull what they pulled against us because those guys would have had to actually leave the game if it was under that rule. So
right.
Looking forward to that greatly.
Well, I'll tell you guys, it's going to be really interesting to see, obviously, if STLSC can continue to move the ball. Because to your point, OJ, they do look like a team that's not just relying on the counter anymore. But yeah. You're going to have to convert chances. You know what I mean? And to your point, last year they were very good on set pieces, both offensively and defensively. They're going to have to shape it up on the defensive side of things. You know, that's going to have to happen for sure.
Yeah. I do kind of think some of it might be that Tim Parker's out because he's great on those pieces. So that might improve when
he's a vocal guy that leads the team, you know, and setting everything up and making sure that everybody's kind of in the right spot as well, especially on the defensive side. So, yeah.
So let's hopefully that'll help when he gets back. But we still need to figure it out in the meantime. These are professionals. So they can do better than they've been doing.
That is true. All righty. Let's transition here to a topic that we have not talked about in a long time. And I know that OJ is going to sustain himself from this one. But let's talk a little bit about the Chiefs, Adam, and our back-to-back champions. The first time in 20 years that has happened.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully we'll be after this season that's going to be coming up. We'll hopefully get the crown for the third time in a row.
Oh, franchise. We will be three. Yes, champions. We will be writing history. This, mark my words, gonna be,
dude,
happening.
I love how the fact that Patrick Mahomes doesn't even get the damn trophy and he's already telling the team that he wants three.
It's
like, we did it back to back, but I want three.
The ball literally like the moment he released the ball went into the end zone, he's like, okay, three.
Yep. That's, we need three.
Three. Yep. So he's crazy.
He's
in the right mindset. So it's like all he does is win no matter what. So, hey, they've already won 3 in 5. So let's go. Well, 4 appearances in 5 years and three rings, three Lombardi trophies.
And 7 AFC championship games.
7 AFC championship games in a row. Yep. So
that's crazy, man.
I mean, it's just nuts. So we got to keep this train rolling.
Yep. And to do that, we needed to definitely get some signings done. And we're going to talk about that first before we get to the draft and kind of what that looks like for our needs and the right now what's expected for us in the draft and predictions. But obviously, those are going to change. But let's talk about the signings that we have and give them some grades here. So the first one is going to be the most important one, and that was Chris Jones, right?
Chris Jones
signs a 5-year, 1.5, wow. Hold on. Let me start. 5 years, $158.8 million. 95 of that is guaranteed, which I thought was kind of, by the way, so the original amount to be guaranteed was 94, not even joking, 94. And Brent Veach said, for number 95, I'm going to give you one more million of guaranteed.
Hey,
and
there
hey.
That's and we locked up a franchise legend for the rest of his prime. There you go.
Yep.
And that right there this definitely ensures our best chance at a three-peat, too, potentially.
For sure. Well, yeah, because, again, we'll get to some of the stats that he has and stuff like that as well, talk about the overall grade. More about the contract. This is the highest overall contract, or highest, richest DT, so defensive tackle contract ever, with 31.8 on AAV, which beats Aaron Donald, who just retired out of nowhere. He had a 31.7. 60 mil is fully guaranteed. And at signing, $60 million is guaranteed at signing. $30 million of it, which is a signing bonus, which then gets spread out over the 5 years. So it's $6 million towards a cap hit each year. That's how they work that with the signing bonus. This is structured that the 2024 cap, so the season we're going into, is only going to cost for Chris Jones $7.4 million. Now, obviously, going into 25, it's like 30 something, and 26 is even higher. But again, he can restructure those deals just like Mahomes does and stuff like that. But this is the thing that I love about this contract most. This is structured to be what they call a quote unquote adjusted team option for the last 2 years. The reason why this contract is, it is on contract for 5 years. It's not like they would have said, oh, hey, we're going to sign you for 3 years with a team option on the last two if we want to keep you and stuff like that. This is a five-year deal. But if we decide to release him for whatever reason, after four, because we don't want to have it on our payroll, can't find a trade, or he just declines. Then there is all the guaranteed money essentially is already washed and has been paid out. And we will only take a dead cap hit of $6 million for that 1 year that we let him go. So say, for example, like something dramatic, and this won't happen, but let's just say that, you know, we need to get rid of him after the 3 years. So he would be carrying a $12 million dead cap hit for the guaranteed money that's in the signing bonus. But the way that the contract is structured, that last $6 million will not be affected. It would only be $6 million of dead money there, and we don't owe him anything else. It is a perfectly structured contract by Brent Veach. Very good for this. As you said, Adam, we're going to get him for the rest of his prime. He's 29 years old. By the end of this contract, he'll be 34. He has 75.5 sacks in his career, which is roughly 9.5 sacks per season. I think this is a good trade or a good deal. Adam, what would you give this if you had to give a letter grade to this deal, right? Including honestly, minuses and plus and stuff like that. Yeah. What would you give?
Honestly, I would give this a solid A. I mean, Chris Jones is one of the most dominant defensive linemen in the NFL, and he consistently pressures quarterbacks and disrupts passing lanes and is really effective against the run. You know, his presence on the field and even off the field really elevates the performance of the entire defense. You know, he has a very strong proven track record of success. You know, obviously he's made, you know, multiple Pro Bowl selections as well over the years. He's always been reliable. And, you know, like I said, he's a leader as well in the locker room. He brings a lot of energy. He's got a real good, you know, winning mentality he brings to the team. And I think that locking him in and for that long-term deal, that means that the Chiefs are investing in the future. And this is definitely what we need if we really are serious about a three-peat. Like I said earlier, this is one of our best chances at a three-peat is our defense. Our defense, so, you know, carried us through a lot of these games for sure.
Yes, it did.
If you don't remember, the Super Bowl was not an offensive game at all. Our defense is the one that kept us in that game as long as we did, for sure. So that reinvesting in that is very important. And so I give it a solid A.
Yeah, and I give it an A plus just for the fact that everything that you said is perfect. I love the fact that this is an adjusted team option for the last two, just in case anything happens. No hard feelings to Chris Jones. He understands the business side of it. He's still going to get paid, but I like the fact that we have an out on this just in case anything happens. And this is not normally how it how these kind of contracts happen. Aaron Donald's contract, by the way, didn't happen this way. Everything was guaranteed all up front for him, and there was no like adjusted team options and stuff like that. I think this is like what Brent Veach is so good about, is making sure that we can get team-friendly deals for the most part, and as well as structuring to make sure that people do get paid and what their value is. And so to me, this was a no-brainer with the fact, by the way, I don't care what people say anymore about Taylor Swift. Y'all can thank Taylor Swift because of the fact that this is an unprecedented salary cap increase of $30 million. Mm-hmm. And by the way, what they estimated that Taylor Swift brought as in revenue to the NFL this season, just in this season alone, $360 million. That's what they're, by the way, hold on. And if you do the math to that, right, divide that by 30 million and you get 32. So they're investing all the Taylor Swift money into the NFL. Yeah, and I think this is and we talked about this offline a couple times, Adam, but I think this is a perfect strategy for the NFL because they're trying to capitalize on this emotion right now to get young women that are, you know, watching these games. Again, my little niece, you know, she was from Jacksonville, was a Jacksonville Jaguar fan. They live in Carolina now, but she's a Chiefs fan because of the fact that you have Taylor Swift. But I guarantee you, she's going to be watching more football in general. And that's what Jimmy, her dad, and my brother-in-law said, was that, you know, I actually get to watch some football with my daughter and explain that. Exactly, that is such a magical thing for a father to be able to have. And all the women now that are interested in, it's not just young women, you know, around the age, you know, be, you know, 10, stuff like that. There are full, full grown women that don't know this. And so, yes, they're paying attention to the Chiefs because of Taylor Swift, but they're asking questions about their hometown teams now.
Right.
And so I think
they're
that's
actually
what they're
generally
doing.
Interested, which is awesome 100%. Because they're actually getting exposure to the. So it's a win-win-win, in my opinion. I mean, as much as people want to say it's a distraction, and not to get too deep into this, but for the few minutes that they might show, or, you know, I think they total it up maybe like 2 minutes a game at most or whatever. Guess what? You're reinvesting all that money into the game. It's improving the product for all of us in the long run. We get to actually sign more of these guys to our team. I'm not bitching about it. Hell, I think that's great. I mean,
and listen,
for any time anytime a league can get that kind of exposure, they would spend all kinds of money to do this, to sign, you know, or to bring in somebody. I mean, look at the MLS and bringing in Messi, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We didn't 100%. Have to spend anything for this. Literally nothing was spent on this. This was given.
Well, I mean, other than the fact that, you know, Travis Kelce had to buy a new home to be able to.
Well, that's Travis Kelce's money. I'm talking about the NFL didn't have to drop a dime on any of this, and they just made a shitload of money.
Yeah. So there's two things that I have to say about this before we move on, because obviously I don't want to make this about the Taylor Swift and all that stuff too. But there's two things I have to say specifically about Taylor Swift and all this. So there was something got posted on X where, you know, I don't remember if this was at KC or if it was an away game, but Taylor Swift's, of course, walking by and all the fans are screaming, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, Taylor, we love you. There was one girl that was that was screaming, Taylor, you're ruining football. That's what she said. And she was very, very loud. Taylor Swift stops, looks at her, smiles and goes, you're here, though, aren't you? And walked away. And I'm like, ooh, like brilliant. Like Taylor, that's the perfect line right there. Well, you're here, though. If I'm ruining football, then why'd you pay for the ticket? And why are you here talking to me right now? Get the hell out of here. Also, you know those Subway commercials, right, where they have the sidekicks or whatever, and like Travis Kelce's already been in one of them. It's like sometimes the sidekick is the main show, baby. Uh-huh. Apparently, a rumor is that they are going to have Patrick Mahomes and Taylor Swift, you know, being advertising a Subway sandwich, and then you're gonna have Travis Kelce holding one of these sidekicks and being like, man, why am I always here? dude, if that happens, I'm gonna laugh my ass off because that is perfect. That is right there would be the I think that works for all three of these people. That is their sense of humor. And I love the fact that Travis can make fun of himself like that. You know what I mean? If that happens, that's the rumor. We'll see if that happens. But that'd be hilarious.
If you have to drop that in the comment box, since apparently you have some influence now, you're an influencer with ESPN. So there you go. Yeah. You could be an influencer. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I do like the one completely different, but where, you know, Stephen Curry, obviously, you know, is a big promoter for Subway. It's for sure. They have Klay Thompson, like, you know, the other part of the Splash Brothers. He's sitting there holding that Auntie Anne's pretzel and, like, you know, the dip or whatever. And he's standing in front, and then, you know, Curry's behind him. You can't see Curry. And Curry just kind of picks out and goes, do you want me to give you two a second? Or you want me to give you in that sidekick? Are you sidekicks that having a moment? And like Klay just kind of looked over his shoulder. He's like, shut up, man. He thought that was so damn funny. Like, you know, anyways. Okay. Let's move off of that and Subway and Taylor Swift and talk more about the signings.
There we go.
We got a lot to get through here.
We have a few to get through.
for sure.
Yeah. So the second one here is Marquise Brown. Obviously, this is a quote-unquote number one receiver. I don't agree with it, but there are some stuff that I want to talk about here for that. 1 year, $7 million. So this guy reported originally that it was an $11 million deal. It is not the case. It is a 1 year, $7 million, but 6.5 of that is guaranteed. So pretty much, you know, the entire contract's guaranteed. $3 million at signing is going to be given with a 3.5 base salary. He's 26 years old, but has 28 touchdowns, 5.6 TDs on average in his career. He's got 3,644 yards in his career, which is an average of 728, which is not bad. He does have one 1,000 season, but here's the biggest kicker. In the 82 games that he could have played, he's only played 88% of them. He has missed 10 games due to injury. So, Adam, what's your thought here on this signing? You know, we talked a lot about this, the wide receiver offline. Let's just hear from you, and then we'll talk more about that.
I think it's a mediocre deal. I mean, I'm not completely upset. But the thing is, for me, while he has shown flashes of brilliance before, the thing is he's also been inconsistent at times as well, and that inconsistency raises concerns about his ability to be a reliable target for Mahomes, you know? We need a reliable receiver. That's what I hope that we would be signing. And then they wound up with Hollywood Brown, and I'm like, while I'm not terribly upset about signing him, I was hoping we would have more. That's my issue. He wouldn't have been a bad one to tag along as well, but he shouldn't be our main target when it comes to receivers here, in my opinion. The fact that he also has been dealt with injuries in the past, that's a concern for sure. If he's unable to stay healthy, that's going to limit his impact on the field. And, you know, and that 1 year, what'd you say? Because originally it was $11 million deal. You said it was a $7 million deal.
It's a $7 million,
$7 million deal. And, you know, that's still a significant investment in somebody that hasn't had the best track record. You know, it could really be viewed as a bit of an overpay. You know, we have other needs, especially in the wide receiver market for sure. And I don't really know. Well, I don't know. Overall, I'm just okay with this. You know, he has speed. I know that he has some playmaking ability.
Yes.
But we'll see how that develops with Mahomes and the chemistry between him for sure. You know, he has some potential upsides, but there are a lot of factors that really make it a mediocre deal here, I think, for the Chiefs. So for me, times will tell, you know, how he integrates with the team and, you know, how he performs. So my grade overall, is that what you're asking as well?
Yeah. Great overall.
Grade was probably a C+.
C+. Okay. Fair enough. So I actually gave this one a B, and the reason why is actually multiple things, but first and foremost, most of the contracts that are around like Brown's skill set and experience level have gone for much more expensive. So they've actually been around $11, $12 million. So the fact that we've saved $4 million off this by giving him a little bit more guaranteed money, because you're going to have many ways, if for only 1 year, might as well, right? Again, brilliant move by Brent Veach. It saves $4 million from what was originally talked about. And essentially, that's what he agreed upon, by the way. But Marquise Brown actually agreed with his agent, $11 million. Brent Veach came back to him and said, listen, I want to give you more guaranteed money because we're trying to make more room for improvement on this team. Would you accept these terms? And he agreed upon it. So that tells me that, A, he is the right fit for the locker room, because it's not all about the dollars and cents with him. He wants to be able to win a championship. Second, he's already training with Rashee Rice and Patrick Mahomes in Texas with Patrick Mahomes's trainer, which is the guy from the Netflix show Quarterback that goes through and does all that weird training and stuff like that. He is, by the way, a hip, ankle, and like calf expert. And so what he does is he strengthens us. And that is what Marquise Brown has had issues with, his ankles. If you remember, you know, Patrick Mahomes, not terribly too long ago, had a really severe like ankle sprain. But last year it didn't affect him at all. And he got rolled up on a couple times too last year. He like got up, was like a little like, you know, okay, but then was able to just move around perfectly fine, right? And that's a lot to do with this guy. That's the reason why Patrick Mahomes is with this guy and won't leave him, right? I love the fact that Patrick Mahomes brought his two top receivers into this. They're going to get a lot of throwing practice together, a lot of cohesion practice together and stuff like that. But Rashee Rice, the second year receiver, is already working very, very close with Brown on formations and how to set up next to each other, even outside of Patrick Mahomes. I love that. I love that. Again, it gives me more hope that this is not going to be, you know, a letdown. Like 2 years ago, Adam, right, when we got rid of Tyreek Hill, we're like, oh shit, we need receivers.
Yeah,
we got Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah.
Right. And we got Juju Smith-Schuster, which a lot of people are like, oh, he's a number two receiver. I'm like, bullshit. He outcompeted Antonio Brown for 2 years to the fact that Antonio Brown went freaking crazy and they had to get rid of Antonio Brown. Juju Smith-Schuster was that cat. And I knew he could be really good. And then you had MVS, right? And obviously MVS last season didn't have a great season. Phenomenal. I mean, MVS is no longer a chief, unfortunately, but I will tell you that he was clutch in the playoffs, 100% clutch in the playoffs.
No doubt about it.
Completely different. And so you can say whatever you want about MVS. He's not Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney obviously didn't play in the playoffs.
Well, so of course,
I have a lot more respect for MVS for that.
Even after he was, but after he was healthy, he didn't play in the Super Bowl, and we know why. So MVS, I trust in that sense for sure.
Yeah. Who's that guy from? He does those videos like if the NFL was scripted. It's Tom something, right?
Oh yeah,
Tom Grossi. Tom Grossi.
Yeah. I watch his stuff all the time. He's great. And he plays all the different characters or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I watched the one where they were talking about the Super Bowl, and so he was talking to the 49ers. He goes, "Oh, and Greenland, Greenlaw, by the way, is not gonna play the entire game. What? Why? Oh, he gets injured." How does he get injured running onto the field? Well, this is not fair. If we lose a guy, they should be losing a guy. You know what? That's totally fair for you, Niners. All right, Chiefs, Kadarius Toney is not playing. What? And then it goes to the Chiefs and he goes, excellent.
Excellent. Yep.
I'm like, that is so damn funny. But so say what you want about MVS. He it was phenomenal in the playoffs. But really to that point is I felt it was, we talked about this. We needed two good receivers. We only got the one. Maybe we pick up a Hunter Renfrow. Maybe we pick up somebody else. But obviously, we're going to be looking to the draft. We'll get to the draft here in just a little bit. But, you know, there was a lot of other receivers that hopefully we could have gotten. Mike Evans, unfortunately, didn't even hit the open market. That one, I think, is the one that we were all in on. And because there was already conversations with Mike Evans, you know, about, hey, coming to Kansas City and stuff like that. But obviously, staying in Tampa Bay. So I think that took the wind out of Brett Veach's sails a little bit. But it is what it is. So my grade to Marquise Brown here is a B. Let's get to the next one here. I'm just trying to keep us moving forward here. Drew Tranquil. So Drew Tranquil signs a 3-year, $19 million deal. 12.5 of that is guaranteed. He gets a $4.5 million signing bonus with a 1.25 base salary. For the next couple of years, which is really good. He's got 11 sacks in his career, 2.2 an average. He did, though, have his second career highest in 4.5 sacks last year. But that was also with him playing about 40 to 55% of the snaps, depending on which way you look at it. So I think him now getting to with Willie Gay being gone, he's going to be he's faster than Willie Gay. He's got better coverage. And I think that Spagnuolo is really like looks at him and goes, okay, you're going to be now the new like cog to work next to Bolton. He did have two forced fumbles last year. And by the way, he's only had three in his entire career. He's got two of them last season. He had 79 combo tackles, which combo tackles means either assists or like his solo tackles. That was his second highest that he's ever had in his career. And again, he's playing way less numbers. So he's only 28, but at the end of this contract, he's going to be 31. You know, Adam, what do you believe, you know, was your take on this? What's your grade on this deal?
Yeah, I give it this honestly a B+, because, you know, Tranquil has been pretty solid for the Chiefs. And I think this deal definitely ensures, continuity in the linebacker core as well for us. You know, he's definitely expressed his love for playing in KC. And obviously the franchise has reciprocated that, you know, by giving him that 3-year deal, which I think overall the deal 19 mil
over 3 years is really considered pretty reasonable for a player of Tranquil caliber, given the inflated market for linebackers right now. You know, I think it provides good value for the Chiefs without having to break the bank. He also has shown a lot of versatility as well in his ability to play, you know, different linebacker positions. He's also contributed on our special teams. He gives us, you know, a lot of depth and flexibility to our defensive unit in general. So, yeah, I think overall, you know, he's a solid contributor to the Chiefs defense. And I think that he's got good instincts on the field overall. He's got a good work ethic. And I think that with us aiming for another Super Bowl run, I think it's, you know, he'd be a valuable player to have with us for sure. You know, that's I'm happy with it overall. B plus.
Yeah, I give it an A, so just slightly above you. And I think the reason why I give it an A is because I do believe that he is going to be a good fit for Spagnuolo in running these. You know, he's a very good coverage guy, but he was really good on the run last year as well. I think he keys off of Nick Bolton, who is a really good run stopper as well. So once he sees Nick doing a specific thing, he's charging right in there too. But he is better at coverage than Nick Bolton, although Nick is pretty good as well.
He is.
I think that, again, I like Tranquil quite a bit. I liked Willie Gay as well, but Willie Gay last year, it just looked like he was slow. And so I wanted us to sign him, but I knew that most likely being a three-ring guy, it wasn't going to be cheap. And so I think that's why we let him walk. I think this was a good replacement because this is less than what Willie Gay wanted. You know what I mean? And you get a younger guy.
It's a good deal, honestly. The contract value was really reasonable, I think. I mean, it really is. I'm glad that we didn't have to break the bank to re-sign it for 3 years for 19 mil, you know?
Absolutely. It does. You're right, though. It gives us some breathing room. And again, you have a younger guy. You know what I mean? So, because I think Willie Gay is like 33. So, I think he's younger than that. I think he's like 31 or something like that, which is like not, it's 3 years under Drew Tranquil, but you got to think that that's for the 3 years we just signed him. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
right.
Let's get to the next guy here. And this is Tershawn Wharton. So most people don't really know Wharton. He is a defensive tackle. We signed him for a 1 year, $2.575 million. All that's fully guaranteed. He is 26 years old. Has had 7 sacks with a average of 2.25 per season. I'll start with this one, Adam, here. I don't really like the signing. I gave this grade a C+. You know, this is a little bit of a plus because of the fact that, you know, the 2.25 sacks is an okay amount. But $2.5 million for Wharton, I mean, yeah, he's only 26, so I get that. But it's a one-year deal. And it's fully guaranteed. I'm not really liking that for a, you know, backup essentially. And I just don't really like that. I thought that we could definitely have done, we could have got somebody else. We could have got a veteran for that money. You know, I just didn't really like this. So that's why I gave it a C+. What's your thoughts?
For me, I gave it a C-. I mean, he spent the last 4 seasons with the Chiefs after signing as an undrafted free agent. You know, and the thing is he's only appeared in 17 games. With one of those in 2023, recording 2 sacks, 7 individual tackles, and 14 assisted tackles. I think we paid too much for him, honestly, especially for that 1 year deal. I'm not thrilled by this all that much, honestly.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. So again, I gave it a C+, and honestly, even now that I'm thinking about it more, I think I'm more around the C- with you for this one, because it just doesn't fit.
It's just nothing really is like coming out as like, this was a great, you know, signing for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think I'm a little bit more of a pessimist with these, but honestly, I just don't see anything that's just been, you know, outstanding with that signing. I don't think it moves the needle.
Agree. 100%. Next one, Irv Smith Jr., the tight end. He signs a 1 year, $1.292 million, signing bonus of $384,000. That is the only guaranteed of that salary here. He has 10 touchdowns in his career. He averages 2.5 per season. But the most touchdowns he's had, and he's only played, I think, 4 seasons. 5 of them came back in 2020. So last year for the Bengals, he had 18 receptions for 115 yards and one touchdown. He is 25 years of age. Again, I'll start with this one. Adam, give you a break from going first. This is a C minus to me. Yeah. He's got talent, but I did not. And it's only 1.29 mil, but I'm sorry. Why did you get rid of Bell? You know, like you're letting Bill walk or Bell walk. And you know what Bell signed for? 2.5 million. You can do. Go get Bell. Bell's been in the system for a long time and has, to me, a much more upside than Irv Smith Jr. I mean, Irv Smith is taller. He's a bigger guy. He's kind of like a Kelsey in that aspect of things, but he hasn't been able to prove it. You know what I mean? Like last year playing for the Bengals, by the way, even without Joe Burrow, was a heavy pass team and only caught 18 balls. One touchdown, 115 yards. Nah, like, I'm sorry, fam. Then draft a tight end if you're worried about it. You know what I mean? Like, draft a tight end in the third or fourth round. I guarantee you they'll probably give you the same fucking production this guy does. To me, this is a C-minus, very, very borderline on a D to me. Turn it over to you, Adam. What's your thoughts?
I'm giving it a C-minus as well. You know, he's had a history of injuries. Overall, he's unproven consistency as well. You know, sure, the most positive thing, I guess, is the fact that I guess he was a former second round pick at one point in time, you know, but honestly, I don't really see him adding much depth to the tight end position. And he really has he's just really limited impact, I think, for us. It just doesn't make sense, that deal, how he's going to fit into our offensive scheme. I don't know how much he's going to be utilized. And I think he's going to struggle to fill that role, honestly. So I don't think that this signing really provides much value.
I agree with you 110%, man. Let's move on here to Derek Nnadi. So Derek Nnadi is their second to last one that we'll talk about. Actually, before we even get to Derek Nnadi, I did want to mention something real quick that I don't have it written down as someone to talk about because the details are not out there. 100%. But I'm trying to give me a second. I'm actually on ESPN trying to pull the guy's name up. So Luis Riz-Zamet, he is an international rugby player that the
Chiefs signed. Yeah. The international.
Yeah. So the details of it are not out. Now, I want to explain a little bit about how this works, right? So he is an international signing. This actually. Because he's going to probably go to our practice team. He's going to be fighting for a spot, right? This won't count towards our salary cap for whatever we pay him. And he's going to get league minimum anyways, but it's not going to count towards the salary cap because it's an international roster slot. This all started, I think, two seasons ago, and it hasn't really been utilized. But the way this spot works is that we have three games where we can. So normally you carry 53 people on your roster going into any given game. Right. So you have 53 that you bring to the game. Of course, more people could be there. They just can't dress and cannot play, if that makes sense. Right.
Yeah.
But three times next season, we can do 54 with him being the 54th. It won't count towards our cap. It won't count towards our roster or anything like that. But we're able to give him a shot on that. They're trying to get more international people the opportunity to be able to come in because obviously there is no, you know, football over there. Or traditional football. So they're trying to see what they can do on this one. So I think this is a good deal because he is a phenomenal rugby player. He's incredibly quick, 4.43 in the 40-yard dash. Are you kidding me? And the guy is built pretty damn well. He's known for his tackling. Like, he's going to be a special teams guy. He's very fast, but he reminds me of Drew Tranquil in the fact that, like, he's kind of built too. So I think it's a good signing for the Chiefs. We'll figure out, you know, maybe we'll talk more about it next week, Adam, when more details come out.
We don't really know the details as far as behind the signing for sure, other than he's coming over. So that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that. Exciting.
Yeah, 100%. Hey, yeah, but I just wanted to explain more of that.
Yeah, and the fact is, too, that we can, we were talking earlier, and I think you said we can bring him up for like three games in the regular season, and it doesn't affect our cap, too, which is, hey, that's awesome. So. You know, we can give him a shot without having to really. There's no risk in that. No downside in that aspect. I'm looking forward to that. I'm excited about it for sure.
So let's get back to the regular signings here, and this is Derek Nnadi. So the defensive tackle here, he signs a 1 year for a league minimal at $1.13 million. It is fully guaranteed. 27 years old. He's only got five sacks in the 6 years that he's played, but he's more of a run stopper. To me, I like Naughty, but he does so many things that are not on – he does more on tape than he does in the statistical category, if that makes sense. He's a very good run stopper, and he opens up the path for Chris Jones to be able to impact the game. I gave this a B because it's $1.13 million for a guy that has been a proven guy for you, and he's somewhat young, 27 years old. Yes, he's only gotten five sacks, and defensive tackles are always going to be associated with their sacks. So his stats don't look all that great. Doesn't also have that many tackles, but he affects the game in such a way that it blocks up a lot of running lanes and is crucial for us on our run stop. So to me, I give it a B. I like Derek Naughty as well. So I think this is a good signing. Adam, what's your thoughts?
Yep. Ironically enough, I add a B as well because he's been a consistent performer for us, particularly in run defense. You know, he really has the ability to be that anchor to the defensive line. And, you know, that's really valuable for our overall defensive scheme as well. You know, he's been with us for several seasons, you know, and he brought that experience and familiarity with our system. Which I think is beneficial for the continuity of our defense for sure. You know, while I'm not completely thrilled by this deal, I think that it's still for the price. I'm not upset about it. I give it a solid B though. Overall, I'm happy that he's still here, but, you know, because like I said, he's really that, that anchor there for our defensive line in that sense. So,
I agree, especially on the run side.
Especially on the run defense side. Absolutely. Yeah. That's very important.
Let's get to the last one that I have here, and that is Deion Bush. He signs a 1 year, $1.165 million. There is no guarantee to any of that. It's a non-guaranteed contract to come back, play with us. He's 30 years old. He has three interceptions in 8 years, nine total tackles last year. All right, I'm gonna let you go first, and then I'm gonna say my piece on this. What'd you think about Deion Bush being
resigned? I gave him a C plus, because you know he has been known before for some of his contributions on special teams, and I know that's really an area that usually gets overlooked, but is obviously crucial for our overall success for sure. You know, his return ensures really, you know, that continuity, like I've been saying for a while, and the more guys that we can lock up from our winning team, the better I see as an overall, you know, successful, you know, perception. And I see him obviously not as a starter, but he definitely provides some level of depth at the safety position. You know, he basically is our insurance basically in case of injuries to key players. You know, what was it? A 1 year deal for $3.7 million. You know,
it's 1 year for 1.165.
Oh, is it 1.65? Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, league minimal.
Okay, league minimum. Well, then that's pretty low. That's really relatively low risk for the Chiefs then, you know.
Yeah.
Overall. So I'm not terribly upset about it. I mean, I give him a C plus overall. It's not a headline signing for us for sure, but, you know. I guess it provides some depth in the secondary.
So here's my thing. And you're right. I'm going to base this off of the stuff that I saw. And this is overlooking special teams, which with the new NFL kickoff rules that are adopting the XFL or now the UFL kickoff rules, special teams is going to be a very big thing in kickoffs nowadays. Yeah. So I think there's going to be more emphasis on those players. So this could be different. But as a guy that played safety for 4 years in high school, I know I didn't play at an extremely high level, but this guy sucks. Like, I watched Deion Bush made several mistakes on the safety because that's the position he played. He looked like crap. When Mike Edwards got injured, and I think this was in the playoffs, and Deion Bush had to come in to cover him, he immediately gave up two touchdowns. He just looked like a deer in headlights, and he's 30 years old. He's not a young guy. He makes really bad keys. Three interceptions in 8 years. I get it that, you know, that can happen when they're not throwing your way, and especially for a safety. But nine tackles last year, I get it. He's a backup, but nine tackles? That's all you contributed this team last year was nine tackles. And then why are you paying him $1.165 million? Get a fucking rookie. You know what I mean? Get somebody else out there that's going to be able to take a league minimal or something. I don't like this signing at all because I don't think that Bush is a good player, if I'm being honest. Dion, I hope you're listening. I hope you prove me wrong, man. Come back next season and give me 10 interceptions. You don't even need that. Show me 5 interceptions, 4, whatever. Or don't even give me 1 interception in like 40 tackles. That's a good safety number, bro. But I'm just telling you, there's a lot that I just did not like about his gameplay last year. And it was very noticeable to me. So again, hopefully that changes, right? But I didn't really like that signing very much, but it is what it is, right?
Yep.
So,
so what
let's
was
get
your
to
grade?
The draft. D overall. D.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Let's go to our draft, and we'll talk about the needs before we do the projected draft. And
yeah,
I have some notes written about that and stuff. Obviously, Adam, we talked about this. To me, this is what I have written down as our needs: wide receiver, defensive tackle, offensive tackle, linebacker, and defensive back. I think that if I'm trying to reposition these, because I just wrote them down, I should have like wrote them as like 1-2, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Wide receiver is clearly the number one.
Has to be.
I think
one. There's no doubt.
Mm-hmm. I think defensive tackle is probably, I think that really offensive tackle is probably number two to me. Defensive tackle or linebacker, maybe number three. Defensive tackle, maybe number four. And then defensive back, number five. That's kind of like where I have what I have.
What about quarterback?
Well, which
needs departure?
That's defensive back.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're good. Yeah. So like you're right. And that's why I definitely wrote that in there, because I felt that that was we're going to need some sort of like replenishment. Right. I mean, yes, we have a plethora right now of younger kids that are trying to get up there, but you're going to have to start backfilling because some of those guys may not pan out. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think that with Snead's departure for Tennessee. Yeah. Go on. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say definitely wide receiver, because, you know, upgrading the receiving core. We've been saying this for a while now, for months. That's so crucial, especially with the loss of some of our wide receivers. And we already didn't have the greatest receiving core, and we've seen the holes and we in this past season, you know, major upgrades need to be happening there. Protecting Mahomes is definitely a priority, and reinforcing that offensive line is absolutely is going to be essential for us for sure. He can't do it all on his own, so you're going to have to give him some time. You know, you're going to have to protect him, but you also have to give him some receivers as well. We saw how crucial that was, because he was just desperate to try to, you know, get the ball, you know, down the field, and nobody can hold on to the damn ball, or they're just, you know, or the pocket's collapsing in, you know, in no time. So therefore he was getting sacked time after time, even though initially in the playoffs, you know, it was looking good, but then it just fell apart. Linebacker for sure, you know, with Gay's departure, that's going to be important. Obviously we talked about a re-signing there, you know, re-signing, but still I think, you know, getting another linebacker may be important.
Great.
Maybe even an edge rusher as well. We need, you know, to maintain our strong defense. Yeah, there's definitely a few areas we need to focus on.
For sure. I think that, again, we kind of hit the top ones and the highlighted ones. So let's take a look at what people are saying for the projected draft. So this is going off of what ESPN has us drafting currently. Number one pick that we have, which is 32nd overall. It's our first round pick. A lot of teams have us with this pick. I don't know what's going to end up happening. I hope that's the case, but we'll get into it. And that is Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver at Texas. So just some stats real quick before we talk about it. This dude is blazing, blazing fast. He set the NFL record for the fastest 40-yard dash in the NFL Combine with a 4.21. Yes, faster than Cheetah, faster than Marquise Brown. So this is phenomenal. He had over 1,000 yards last year. He's got 26 total touchdowns in 3 years. He is a smaller guy at 6'1 and 172 pounds. And what they said, drops have been a bit of a concern. But thoughts on this pick overall, you know, what I'll say is my thoughts on this is I effing love this pick. But I hope he's still there. I think there's a lot more interest in him now because of the 40-yard dash since he broke that record. I don't know if he falls to 32. There's a lot of other receivers that have way more pedigree in front of him, and a lot more people, teams have more needs. I'm hoping he falls down to 32nd. We'll have to see what ends up happening, right? You know, what's your thoughts here? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but that's my concern is who do we put in potentially if he is taken, you know, by the time our 32nd overall pick comes through, you know, and that's where I was looking at, and I've been looking at some potential opportunities. You know, they're mentioning a couple here. Quentin Johnston from TCU, because of his size and catch radius, he can be, you know, red zone threat, it looks like. A fairly reliable target, apparently. And then Mitchell as well from Texas Longhorns. He's pretty tall.
That's the other
tall.
Guy that I saw.
Yeah, pretty tall guy. He's pretty good receiver overall. Looks like he can make some deep plays downfield in some contested situations. He could, you know, things come to my mind is maybe he could complement, you know, Rice as well there. In the offense, maybe. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. But yeah, I hope you're right, but I'm concerned with that, you know, since we only get the 32nd overall pick there, that he may be gone by that point. So let's have something in our back pocket.
I do have to say something. You said Quentin Johnston. That'd be very, very, very hard stretch for us to be able to pick up since he got drafted last season by the Chargers.
Oh,
well, so I don't know.
I was looking at an article here.
Yeah, so it's no big deal. I was like, wait, Quentin Johnston. Like, I knew that name very familiar because he played obviously in the college football playoffs, and so. I was like, I recognize that name. I'm like, wait, hold on. Did he get drafted last year? And I'm like, I think he's at the Chargers. Sure enough, he was at the Chargers. Yeah, because that was a big, big thing.
I'm looking at an old article here. Yeah.
Yeah. It's no big deal, though. But yeah, that's going to be the question, though. And, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is not going to fall on our fucking lap, right? So, you know, we'll see what happens. But if we get that pick, I would be ecstatic. I think that would be a perfect pick because now you have a lot more speed. And you have three receivers that can do what you need to do. You have Rashee Rice working underneath, Marquise Brown, and you would then have Worthy that are going to be able to move around. I think this would be a good pickup if he's available.
Right.
Sure. Let's take a look at the second round. What they have for the second round, 64th overall pick. They have Javon Boudler, Bullard. Excuse me. Bullard. He's a safety out of Georgia. He plays like Tyrann Mathieu. So, he's a strong man-to-man coverage, but also really good safety in zone. He is decent size for a safety. He's, 5'11", but he's 195 pounds. He had two interceptions in both 22 and 23 and over 50 total tackles last year. You know, for my thoughts on this, I mean, this is a pretty good pickup here, to replace Sneed.
Yeah.
And it's the second round guy. This is typically when you're going to start looking for safeties. You know, your cornerbacks are going to be like your high end quarterbacks are going to go in first round and early second round, stuff like that. Late second round, this is when you're going to start looking at safety. So I think there's good value here, too. So I think I like this pick for sure there because he's available.
That's definitely one of our gaps for sure. And like was mentioned earlier with Sneed's departure, we really need to make sure that we have somebody that can come in eventually. You know, I don't know, obviously, how ready he'll be, you know, after we draft him. But I hope, but hopefully long term, though, you know, he can be a good replacement.
Yeah, and I like the versatility because that would give you the ability to work with Spagnuolo, who's very, very fluid with being able to use safeties and bring them down on blitzes to be able to bring them into a corner. And this guy would fit perfectly because he's very good at man-to-man. And if you're going to bring down safety into like a cornerback position, you're going to be playing man to man. If not, you're playing back and being a ball hawk in the safety position. So I think this would be a very good play because if you're taking the best of what we have and Spagnuolo working with it, I think this is really good. So we'll have to see how that goes.
That'll be interesting. Yeah.
Yep. What they have for us in the third round, the 95th overall is Dwayne Carter, defensive tackle out of Duke. He is 6'2", 302 pounds. 72. For his combine score, he had a 72 total points, which was eighth for defensive tackles. He had 12 sacks in 5 years at Duke. Thoughts for this one for me is, I mean, it's an okay pick. It's probably the best defensive tackle at that position in the draft. But maybe you should take a look at an offensive tackle, because I don't know if you necessarily need a DT there. Maybe look for an edge rusher, kind of like what you were saying. We don't really have, I mean, you have George Karlaftis, but at the same time, like, we could definitely go with another George Karlaftis. You know what I mean? They could pick up in the third round and throw him on the edge there. And I think that opens up everything more than a defensive tackle at this point in time, especially since you just re-signed two of them in Warden and Naughty. So, I mean, I'm not terribly too thrilled with this one. I mean, it's an okay pick, but yeah, I don't know. What's your thoughts?
I mean, the guy's a good size and frame for, you know, and a decent arm length. I'm looking at his overall stats here. You know, he's 6'2", 302, and he's got a wingspan of, you know, damn near 80 inches. But
yeah, which is big. Yeah,
it is. He's a big guy. And, you know, and apparently he's got some quickness, apparently, and bursts off the line of scrimmage, it says. But the thing is, or needs, you know, while he may be a decent guy to pick up for defensive line, it's just the question is do we need that? Whereas, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I think strengthening the pass rush really remains more important for maintaining that strong defense as well, you know?
100%.
So, but yeah, we'll see.
Well, let's head here to the fourth round. And the 131st pick, they have us picking up Will Shipley, running back out of Clemson. Will is 5'11", and he's 210 pounds. He had 27 touchdowns in 3 years, but he also had 602 receiving yards in those 3 years and two touchdowns, all both of which were last year. The guy's great hands and a utility guy. My thoughts on him, I watch a lot of Clemson football, as you know. I love Will Shipley coming to the Chiefs, especially in the fourth round. However, I mean, the reason why I love him, as I should say, is he would be the perfect replacement for Jerick McKinnon. He's not going to take away anything that from Pacheco, but he is a very good guy at being able to catch the ball, and he works very well in the slot as well. He's a very good slot receiver that can kind of work out there. You can put him in like a two running back formation, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then, because, you know, Pacheco's not bad to run the ball either. Run double wide receiver screen. You can do, there's a lot that you can do with Will Shipley, because he's also very much like Pacheco in the fact that he is a hard runner. But there's probably other needs that we need rather than running back in this position. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to go running back, the fourth round is probably going to be that sweet spot, because if you're going to go fifth or sixth or seventh round, you're getting guys that were backups in college. The fourth round is going to be the lower end, you know, not like we're going to replace a running back. So this is going to be the time to get that for your backup running back, so to speak. He had a lot of experience in Clemson, was a key focal point last year to their offense since they were having issues throwing the ball. I like the pick, but we also probably do have other needs. What's your thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking here in the 3 years he was at Clemson, he carried the ball 526 times for, it looks like, 2,748 yards, so 5.2 yards per carry, 31 touchdowns, and he also caught the ball 85 times. So overall, you know, I would say looking at the draft, you know, he's one of the better receiving backs for sure. Being small and shifty, and you know, he could definitely complement you know, the Pacheco style that we're used to as well. But like you said, you know, and also the fact that the dude's fast as well. He's not only is running sub 440, but you know, I think that eventually down the road he would make a great addition when we need a running back. But back to your point though, there's not really a huge need for that right now. But maybe they're planning for the future. That's the thing. It doesn't really, you know, have a change of pace for us with him. You know, like, it doesn't really move the needle for us right now in our immediate needs, but maybe long term.
And for sure. And again, if you're looking for a long-term replacement for Jerick McKinnon, this is going to be it. It's just unfortunate that it's going to cost you in this draft when you might need someone else. Yeah. But, you know, who knows? We might be able to find some in free agency, right? So
for sure.
It's just going to see what happens. All right. So we actually got two picks in the fifth round. We do not have a sixth round pick. So the first pick that we have in the fifth round is at the 159th position, and they have us going with Daquan Harley, Hardy, excuse me, cornerback out of Penn State. He is 5'9", 181 pounds, has 5 interceptions in the past 4 years, 60 total tackles in 4 years. My thoughts here is probably look at a linebacker in the fifth round. Why are we going with another cornerback? I don't like this pick. I don't know why they have us projected for this pick. And I don't think he really fits with where he was at. With Penn State, he was not very productive for a cornerback. And I just don't like looking at like the statistics, not the statistics, but the short notes that they have for the combine. I don't think that this guy is going to fit into Spagnuolo's defense very well. So I'm not very
kind of a small guy.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean,
he's 5'9", 179. For a cornerback, he's kind of a small dude. And he's got, looking at his overall production rate, it's not great. It's 55. Nope. It's not great at all.
To me, he's a corner. He's, if you're gonna throw him in quarterback, he's gonna be a nickel corner. So meaning he's gonna be covering a slot receiver, like a shorter slot receiver. But that's not a guarantee either in the NFL because some of these slot receivers are 6'2". So I mean, when you're going up against a guy that is literally 5 inches taller than you, how are you gonna be able to outcompete?
I don't see this. This is a good. I don't see how this would really be a good pick for us. You know, he doesn't really appear to have really the ideal speed or acceleration either for that position. You know what I mean?
100%.
I don't understand that. I hope that they go against that choice. I mean, I understand that it's, you know, the fifth round. I understand that, you know, things are getting a little slim pickings, but I'm not thrilled for this in the fifth round. I think we could land somebody better because we really don't have a need for a cornerback like this. Not at all.
The next one that we had in the fifth round is for the 173rd pick. This is Logan Lee, defensive tackle out of Iowa. He's 6'5", 291, so big guy. 3 sacks in the each of the last 3 years, so he gets 3 sacks. He's got 9 in the last 3 years and 3 each of them. Over 50 total tackles in the past 2 years, so good production playing out of the Big Ten. But my thoughts to this is, why another defensive tackle? Like in the like really?
Yeah, we
like,
really need more offensive tackle in my opinion than a defensive tackle.
Yeah, like I don't know why we're going with yet another defensive tackle here at this position when you just signed 2 of them. So unless you're planning on moving him to the edge or something like that, but I mean, typically defensive tackles don't work when you move them to the outside edges.
Yeah,
you
know I mean, we definitely need that edge rusher for sure. We definitely do. We need, like I've been saying for a while, we need to strengthen our pass rush team for sure. But I, looking at this guy, he doesn't really, he really lacks a lot of mass and as well. And
he's tall, but that's about it. You know, 6'5",
that's all he's
got.
Dude,
but 290
he lacks a lot of mass though. So to be where he's at for a defensive tackle. On top of it too, I'm looking at his overall quickness and he's a pretty slow guy overall too. Yeah. He doesn't have, you know, foot quickness at all to really create, you know, mismatches inside at all. It just doesn't make sense. Not thrilled by that.
So our last pick is in the 7th round, and this is the 221st overall pick. This is not Mr. Irrelevant, but this is Tyler Owens, where they have projected for us. Tyler Owens, safety out of Texas Tech. He's 6'2", 210, 1 interception in 5 years playing for Texas Tech. So my thoughts are it's in the 7th round, so I guess whatever, but why another safety? Like, is the third defensive back, like, in 7 rounds, that's kind of ridiculous. Like, Snead is not going to, like, you know, we had a plethora. That's the reason why you're letting Snead go. So I don't understand why we're having 3 defensive backs. You know what I mean? Come on.
Right. And the thing is, too, that didn't we just re-sign Deion Bush as well for another year?
Yeah, 100%. Like, and that was my point, though. So, like, if you're going to go, like, if you're projected to do this, right? And again, this is acting like this is what the Chiefs are saying that they're going to draft.
Sure.
But if we believe that this is their need, then why the fuck did you just sign Deion Bush? You know, that's what I mean? What the I'm guy's saying, 30. You know? This kid right. came in is like 23, right. you know?
Yeah. So yeah. I don't understand that at all. But I guess it is what it is when it comes to, I guess when it comes to the seventh pick, you know, maybe there's not much to pick from, I guess. So I don't know. Yeah. His production score is not great at all. Dude is not, he's 6'2", 216.
Again, playing in the Big 12.
I mean, I guess that's not terrible for a, you know, for a safety by any means. But the thing is I'm looking at his overall statistics, and he's not blowing me away.
No, in the Big 12, which is known to have a lot of air raid teams, especially around. Yeah. Well, Texas Tech is definitely like the I mean, that's where the first team that had the air raid team was a Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. But anyways. Like you, in the Big 12, you typically have a lot of pass first offenses, and you only have one interception in the 5 years you played at Texas Tech. That is kind of alarming for a safety. You know what I mean?
I mean, this guy's going to be, you know, on practice squad if we bring him in, and he will be sitting there probably through the whole entirety that he's with the Chiefs, more than likely.
Probably.
That's my feeling.
Yeah, I agree.
It is what it is. Okay.
Well, that's our draft prediction so far. We'll see, obviously, how the draft plays out. Hopefully, we get Worthy and a couple of the other guys that we've maybe talked about, but we'll see how it goes. But we've kept OJ on the sidelines for a little too long here. Let's go ahead and head to our sign-off. Adam, would you like to tell the good listeners and how they could interact with our show and ask us questions?
I would love to. Check us out on facebook.com/ The Hometown Losers. As always, that's spelled LOUSERS. Give us a like, comment, share. Definitely want to interact with us. We'd love to hear from you, especially if you have any questions that you'd like to ask us, when we'd love to be able to respond. Also, if you're not on Facebook and you're on Twitter, also known as X, check us out at x.com/hometownlosers. Give us a like, get a retweet, and check us out. Or check us out at thehometownlosers.com, where you can always stay up to date on all of our episodes and also ask us questions there as well.
All right. Appreciate that, Adam. And again, please reach out to us if you have any questions. We'd love to do the mailbag segment, so please ask those questions and interact with the show in any way you can. OJ, what do you have for the game of the week this week?
Well, it's kind of a if-else kind of thing. Like, so if the Blues win tonight against Calgary, then the game of the week is going to be San Jose. Blues playing San Jose here in St. Louis at 7 p.m. on Saturday, because they basically need to win every game to have any hope of winning the playoffs next one. So every game is the most important game. If they lose tonight, they're pretty much out of the race. So then, you know, fuck it. Might as well go with St. Louis, Real Salt Lake, which will be at Salt Lake at 8:30 on Saturday as well. So,
and don't forget, too, that the Bad Hawks play at 3 p.m. as well. So a lot of St. Louis sports going on.
Yeah, check them out on Channel 2 on Saturday as well. Yeah, 3 o'clock. I'm looking forward to that game.
Sports app doesn't have it.
Well, I'm sorry.
No worries.
I didn't have I missed that totally. Yeah. I'm still gonna probably rank that below the other two, but
oh yeah, it's the first game of the season. I totally understand.
Yeah.
as a season ticket holder for the Battle Hawks, though, I will be definitely watching that game. So.
Oh yeah. I'm gonna watch it for sure. It's a big weekend.
Definitely. All right. Well, thanks for that, OJ. All right. Let's go ahead and send it over now to Josh for this week's
Stat Blast.
All right, guys. So I don't have two, like, normally we do one that's like kind of like weird procedural stuff and then one statistic one stuff. I didn't get to really see anything that like stood up for like the weird like procedural stuff, like last week's NASCAR uses nitrogen to fill up their tires instead of compressed air. But I do have two stat ones this week. Two quick ones, but this is interesting to me. So In the 1886 World Series, they played a total of 6 games. Gentlemen, how many errors were there in that 1886 World Series?
Oh, wow.
1886?
I'm going to guess just something off the wall and say, yeah. I don't know. Like in the entire thing.
Mention how many games?
I don't know. 100. 100. I don't know.
How many?
Okay.
What?
They played 6. No. They played 6 games. They played 6 games. I was asking or answering OJ's question.
Okay. I'm going to say 100 because it's probably something outrageous. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it could be that out.
I don't know.
But I'm going to go much more conservative. I'm going to say 25.
The total errors for that series, which was won by the St. Louis Browns 4-2 over the Chicago White Stockings, was 63. They had 63 errors in 6 games.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So I wasn't ridiculous. Crazy.
And they weren't.
No, you weren't.
Loves, right? So.
You know, holy crap. It was like Little League, and their ball was just flying everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, pretty much. Sounds like it was an adventure.
Yeah. That's why. Over I guess it had to be something astronomical. So I was like 100 just because it sounds stupid.
Let's say like 6 errors per, let's put 5 errors per game. And I'm like, oh, 30 seems kind of high. Let's drop it down to 20.
That's why I had to have this as like part of the stat blast. Cause I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. 63 errors in 6 games. You're averaging over 6. Like that's ridiculous. Like, come on.
Wow.
Dude. But almost 11 errors per game. I mean, and speaking of like making changes at baseball here, you know what they should do is they should just grease the damn ball so that way there's more air. So then like it's just
going to
be
go.
Like Little League. I think that would be a better product than shifting over and stuff like that.
Well,
anyways,
there is going to say a quick little stat blast on my own. I don't know if anybody remembers, but in it was Boston, the long part, the curse of the Boston Red Sox, as everybody remembers. They were playing in the 86 World Series against the Mets, and anyway, it was one of the more memorable plays in baseball history, and it was Buckner. Yeah. In the 10th inning. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Yep. The Buckner play. Uh-huh. Yep.
In game 6. Everybody also believes that for people that were not around there, they believe that was game 7. That was actually game 6.
It wasn't. It was game 6. You're absolutely right. But that is but that really remains as one of the main reasons why there was a curse on the Red Sox, or everybody said that, because it's what led to them.
Do you know where Buckner lives now? Because
where?
Because of all the death threats, he lives in New York.
Does he really?
Wow. Yeah, he lives in New York.
I mean, I'm not surprised. After that,
the Mets asked him to come to Shea Stadium and throw out the first pitch. Like it was, I think, in 2020, and he politely declined.
Wow.
Why are you going to do that to that man? Come on, bro. That's like, oh my God. Yeah, that's
I just remember that. That was a big deal, and I remember that was a big, big upset for them in the 86 World Series. So, and that was where I think that they ended up losing that on an error. So,
yeah, that's a rough one to go down.
Yeah. Yep. Losing it on an error.
Alrighty. This is also kind of related typically to errors, but 4 strikeouts in a single inning. Is it possible?
Yes
it is. I've actually personally have pitched where I've had 5 strikeouts in 1 freaking inning. No joke. And I gave up 3 fucking runs that inning because my defense was terrible. Anyways. So 4 strikeouts in 1 inning has happened how many times in the MLB?
Oh, wow.
I'll ask you, gentlemen.
Probably a lot.
Maybe 10?
10. Okay. Adam's got 10. OJ, what's your guess?
Going back to like the 1800s and whatnot.
For this statistic, I mean, it's just going back to MLB statistics. So I think that started like 18. Yeah. So, as you said, like 1850, 1840, somewhere around there.
And like strikeouts in 1 inning.
Good. Yeah. 4 strikeouts in 1 inning.
I'll say like 1,000. I don't know.
1,000? No.
It has happened 60 times.
60 times.
MLB history.
All it takes is for the pitcher to strike a guy out, catcher drop the ball, and not be able to get it over to first in time. Right?
Mm-hmm. And strike out. Well, they have to strike out
Everybody else.
That happened again. Yeah.
I was banking on old timey catchers being a lot worse. Given that we had,
I was thinking more. I didn't think it was happening as often.
60-something errors in it.
That's why I thought it was less.
Given we had a World Series with 60-something errors in it in the 1800s.
Yeah, granted, I see your point. Yeah,
maybe they did screw up a lot back in the day, you know?
They would not catch the third strike.
Yeah.
Yep. And then have to strike so anyways, out again. Anyway.
Yeah, so that's this week's stat blast. So very interesting stats, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
All righty, guys. Well, appreciate your time. And as always, if you want to interact with the show, please hit up those socials. Please pay attention to the games that are coming down that OJ has selected for the game of the week, because they should be definitely good games. All three should be good games at this point in time. But until next week, we will catch you here on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
This is OJ, and I wanted to thank you guys for listening to the equivalent of three dudes sitting at a bar talking about sports. We'll catch you next week on the Hometown Losers.